gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I am Hal Sparks, of course, filling in for a, I guess, one day and a half vacationing Stephanie as she goes to see her mother,
who turns some lobster.
Yes, who turns 90 years old.
Yes.
I think she turned 90 yesterday.
Oh, okay. Well, at that point, does it really matter? I mean,
it really doesn't.
You can't actually mince words about hours when you're 90. At that point, it's like, you know, I turned 90 when the trees were brown, when the hay was being pulled in off the fields. Like, at that point, you've been around so long.
Right.
Yeah. You're talking in lunar cycles.
Yeah.
But
oh, by the way, we need to do this.
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be?
The hump day. Here's your chance to do the hump day.
Hump days with Hal Sparks.
Yes! Yes!
And we need to do this.
Oh.
Right. Double hit.
His is so much sexier than mine.
The world is a new one. Come on, get Jackie.
I actually, for anybody who was old enough to have a Partridge Family-ish crush, was it Susan Day?
Susan Day.
Yeah.
Which went on to be on L.A. Law.
Yeah, right? it turns out to actually be a very sexy theme song. See what I mean? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I would have worn my bell-bottoms if I'd known.
Yeah. Well, we're on the radio, and even the cameras from Current can't see below, so just make it up.
Yeah.
I have bell-bottoms
it's
on.
The theater of
I'm
the
not
mind.
Wearing pants.
It's not pants-free Friday yet.
It doesn't matter. With Jim, it's just... You don't know. It's a crapshoot. Will he have pants today or not? Sometimes
I forgot.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes I'll call in and I go, Chris, is it a pants day? And he'll go, nope. And
nope.
I'll have to pay whoever's in the car with me $5.
Oh, okay.
Chris is always Lederhosen day.
Well,
yeah.
Well,
I wore Lederhosen as a teenager.
So, speaking of Lederhosen, and oddly
and
fitting pantalones. I was leading, and we're in the pantsel region, the no-pants area. It was just, we all had to get slightly dressed up this weekend, because we all had balls this weekend. Everybody had, well,
even Jackie.
Jackie and I had balls this weekend.
We had a lot of balls.
I didn't have balls this weekend.
You did not have balls this weekend.
No balls. I have no tux.
He didn't want to wear
balls.
A tux.
Well, I don't have a tux.
You
and
can
I,
rent a tux.
And I didn't want to travel with a tux.
Plus, you can rent a tux.
And
did you not go to prom?
It would take a month to fit him for a tux.
Well, true. They'd have to bring in extra shoulder fabric and create, you know, enormous, like.
Yeah. Instead of taking it in, they'll have to take it out a little.
Yeah, it would look like Jamie Gumb's neighbor's house with all these different cuts of fabric all tied together.
I got that reference.
Thank you.
That was Silence of the Lambs.
It is. Thank you.
On the way over to D.C., I was sitting next to this enormous woman, so I was like halfway out in the aisle. And I thought, in the flight back, it'd be much better. And I forgot that I'm sitting next to Chris.
Yeah, right.
Like this Popeye.
Yeah, absolutely.
I gave you plenty of room.
He did, actually. And he had to. Because, quite frankly, you take up a decent amount of space, young man. The two of you were hilarious next to each other.
My
guts
are exploding.
Yeah, I walked by them on the plane.
Were they elbowing each other?
Yeah, they were. But it was like brothers. They're like, get off
quit
my...
It.
You're,
quit
no,
it.
No, that's my armrest. It was hilarious.
I had to eat my lunch like this,
yeah,
you know?
Like a velociraptor.
Yeah, like a T-Rex.
Yeah, right. Like a Tyrannosaurus using chopsticks. Chris is just jammed in the middle and can't cross his legs.
You had a middle seat?
I had a middle seat.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Well... You know.
Yeah.
There should be a law against that.
That's what you get for not having balls.
And there was a tiny
extra.
There was a really tiny man next to me in the aisle seat. I'm like, please let me have the aisle seat. I need it.
He's right. Like laying out.
See, I do
out.
I do windows because I do what I call punk first class, and I highly recommend this to everybody or whatever. If you are especially if you're physically svelte enough like myself to fit comfortably in a normal seat without having to reach over too much, bring your own movie in the form of an iPad or a laptop or something like that. Get your own food in the airport or even bring it from home if you choose to. Yeah. Bring your own little blanket, and if you need a pillow, sleep up against the hull, and you've got your own little nest.
Oh, I like that.
And I traveled overseas.
You cocoon in the corner.
Yeah,
like
you spend $3,000 for a plane ticket. Save that money. Spend it where you're going.
Yeah.
You could have a whole day of spying and still have tons of money left over for the price of 6 hours of dumb comfort. It makes no sense.
You know, spend $10
$10 on a couple of movies, put it on your iPad.
Exactly.
There you go.
There you go. And you get to keep them.
Yes.
Unlike the ones on the movie that you have to, that your card swipe never works. And you're spending.
Excuse me, my card doesn't work. They don't work with. Well, can you try it? I'll go up front. You know what? I just gave you the movie. They knew that.
They
don't
want to
hear from you anymore.
GTE Airphone.
We have Dana.
I'm calling you from the plane. It's $45 a second.
I have never seen anybody use those things.
I've used them.
I have. Why?
Was there an
air emergency?
No.
Well,
no,
they've taken them out of pretty much all
totally,
planes.
Totally.
Yeah.
This was in, you know, whatever, 2002.
Okay.
Probably the last time I used one. Yeah. Because now, actually, if you're in a situation, you would just have your iPad and you'd be able. I've been able to either Skype or FaceTime.
Our flight yesterday.
Yeah.
Let's just say an airline that rhymes with Schmoonited doesn't feature Wi-Fi
on
its
plane. No, they don't. It's so bizarre. Do you have a butter churn? How do you make the food on
really,
this place?
Really, a major east to west or west to east route, like
from D.C. to Los Angeles,
right.
And you don't have Wi-Fi. Like, I get it. If you're going,
you do realize these are rich people problems.
Yeah, this is first world problems.
Yeah. Absolutely, and they should be. That's the whole point of actually elevating your society past a certain point. We're a beacon to the rest of the world.
I was shocked that there were no restrooms. I should climb out on the wing and squat.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Which is hard to do at 600 miles an hour.
If you're taking,
there are no chickens on your plane.
Exactly. If you're flying from the middle of Pennsylvania to upstate Michigan into the upper peninsula,
I would expect no Wi-Fi.
Absolutely, and people with crates of chickens. That's fine.
Sure.
We don't normally fly, but they won't allow us to have our wagons on the open highway. That kind of thing.
Amish Airlines.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough.
By the way, we of course had the Sexy Liberal Show.
That's
amazing.
Right. Oh, God, was
so
that a good show.
Fun.
And Dana in Maryland was with us. Dana, are you there? You had.
Yes.
Yes.
I am.
How was it?
How are you?
I'm spectacular. And you had a.
Oh, how
are
you guys doing?
We're all a little tired because we just got in last night.
I can imagine. Listen, first I want to say just thank you. And it was so cool to meet you guys. It was amazing.
Yes.
And my best friend brought us front row seats and she surprised me and it was awesome. And you guys were hilarious. And it was, you know, great to meet everybody. And how,
and
like you said, Steph mentioned yesterday, you're with like-minded people.
Yeah.
It is so refreshing.
It's so relaxing.
Sitting in a restaurant with, you know, Rocky Mountain Mike and Sue from Ann Arbor and all the chatters that I chat with every day, you know.
And that we're chatting during the show. That was the funniest thing.
Well, it becomes a social gathering. It becomes this.
We do. We do talk to Steph through the chat because she told me to be quiet, too, and I deserved it. But,
yes, she did. I saw that part.
I told my best friend, I said, you know, I'm not sure they're going to know who I am. And then John did his little teabagger thing, and I was the wife that raised my hand.
Oh, right. You're the one who stood up and said that you take pride in your...
He's like, that's you. He's like, okay. He goes,
that's why he invited
you
backstage. That explains everything.
It was hilarious. And so my best friend said to me, she goes, I bet they're backstage going, that must be Dana from Maryland.
Right. Absolutely.
She's a teabagger. That's it. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dana. It was so great to see you.
One more thing, though. What I did want to... My topic I wanted to talk about was abortion.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
And Rachel's doing, I know I'm not supposed to mention, but a really, really fascinating series about it.
Sure.
And I didn't know that these small little legislative laws, like the woman has to listen to the tape of the heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
And then
they
have to tape her reaction, her physical reaction. And I wanted to ask you how, as a small town kid, how do you deal with that?
Well, unfortunately, before Roe v. Wade and before it was a protected right in this country, a lot of women handled this, quite frankly, like Patrick Swayze's dance partner in Dirty Dancing.
Right.
They went to a shady
doctor
or no doctor at all.
Yes.
They engaged in a physically scarring behavior.
Or they did it on their kitchen table.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. And it became the norm. Or wealthy people who could pretend that they didn't have to do these kind of things would send their daughter to visit a cousin and she would come back without the child being there anymore.
You know, there's one clinic in each of these four states, and some women have to drive 5 hours. Then they have to wait 72 hours to drive back. It's disgusting.
Absolutely, Dana. Thank you for the call.
I love you guys.
Love you too, Dana. Thanks for coming on Saturday.
Yes, there was, you know, that's been the drip of, you know, legislature-wise across this country.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we were talking a lot about this, about the fact that the focal point – was on the president because of the inauguration and this idea that, you know, he's our primary representative. I was not comfortable. I'm never comfortable using the word leader because I don't feel as a human being I need one. I think you're our primary representative.
That's fair enough.
Or even our lead representative. I don't need a, like, if aliens landed, I wouldn't go, take me to your leader. I'd go, I kind of pick my own, you know, I mean, I have an ethical standard
charge,
I live.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But if you want to talk to somebody who knows where the military stuff is, he's over there. It's, but in this case, you know, there's so much focus on the president, especially in terms of how progressives view him.
Yeah.
That the Republicans in the House have gotten away with everything, and you know, in even though they have a bad rating, it doesn't affect their chances of being reelected. And unfortunately, they have been stacking in state legislatures and in the House of Representatives all these anti-choice laws that are every egregious wiggle you can possibly come in. And none of them, by the way, I think would stand in, up against Roe v. Wade. Because there's so many privacy concerns in something like she was, you know, like the fetal heartbeat bill. They're adding things like she has to be taped listening to it. Well, the fact that she's even in the office being scrutinized or filmed while she's getting a medical procedure or
so
even
invasive.
Such a violation
so
of
invasive.
Your privacy to begin with.
It is absurd. Right.
But they do things even so much as I don't know if it's law necessarily or if it's just the doctor's preference to find out how far along the woman is, but they'll have you get a sonogram.
Right.
And that can be traumatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, even that's, just making that decision, having to see what is growing at that moment can be traumatic for a woman. And I think that unless you're in that position, it's inappropriate for someone to make that choice on your behalf.
And I will say, without flinching, that I believe that to be the goal, that making the woman uncomfortable is the entire point of all of that.
That's the only point.
Right. We'll be back right after this with more of the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie's away, but...
The mice are playing.
We'll be back right after this.
There's something funny going on in talk radio. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Stephanie is with her mom, who is turning 90 years old in the last 24 hours.
Yesterday, I believe it was.
Yes, like I said.
She gets to celebrate all month if
she
wants.
She does, absolutely.
Yeah.
And once you hit 90, actually, every minute is a celebration. You know,
pretty much.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Right now, Secretary Clinton is actually testifying on Benghazi.
Response from the State Department, stayed in close contact with officials
from across our government
and the Libyan government. So I saw firsthand what Ambassador Pickering and former Chairman Mullen called timely and exceptional coordination. No delays in decision making, no denials of support from Washington or from our military. And I want to echo the review board's praise for the valor and courage of our people on the ground, especially the security professionals in Benghazi and Tripoli. The board said the response saved American lives in real time, and it did. The very next morning, I told the American people that heavily armed militants assaulted our compound, and I vowed to bring them to justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood with President Obama in the Rose Garden as he spoke of an act of terror. It's also important to recall that in that same period, we were seeing violent attacks on our embassies in Cairo, Sana'a, Tunis, Khartoum, as well as large protests outside many other posts where thousands of our diplomats served.
She's doing good.
So I immediately ordered a review of our security posture around the world with particular scrutiny for high-threat posts. I asked the Department of Defense to join interagency security assessment teams and to dispatch hundreds of additional Marine security guards. I named the first Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for high-threat posts, so missions in dangerous places get the attention they need. And we reached out to Congress to help address physical vulnerabilities, including risk from fire, and to hire additional diplomatic security personnel. Second, even as we took these steps, I hurried to appoint the Accountability Review Board, led by Ambassador Pickering and Admiral Mullen, so we could more fully understand from objective, independent examination what went wrong and how to fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the basis of the Republican conspiracy theory around Benghazi has it varies from ludicrous and dismissive of reality to violently conspiratorial and almost aliens have taken over a military base level conspiracy. Yeah. The main one being that that Obama watched. And I've seen this one floated on Fox News.
Oh, we've played it in Right Wing World.
Yeah, that
Obama
that
sat there and watched it while it happened.
For 7 hours, yeah. Watched them kill, and didn't do anything. Yeah. Insisted on not doing anything, which is...
A, Obama doesn't have time to watch anything for 7 hours.
Right. But it's what they were trying to do was make it arguably Bush's 9/11 mistake about saying, I just saw a plane fly into the towers when he wouldn't have been able to see them fly into the towers because he was sitting in front of the school when he said it. That kind of thing, which you know, is one of the fundamental pinnings of loose change and those things about, you know, that point to the 9/11 conspiracies. Mm-hmm. The right, I think, arguably is very upset they don't have one of those situations.
Right. Yeah.
They also don't have a president who is going to make the same mistake that Bill Clinton made. And so they want to find any needle point that they can find to get inside and try to make him look as corrupt as they are, quite frankly.
Well, she's doing so well today because she faked that illness and had all that time to prepare for today.
Right,
that's
exactly
why she's so strong.
Yeah, for rehearsal.
Yes.
That's why they were pretending to do surgery on her skull.
Right.
Yeah,
no,
she was rehearsing
actually
what she's reading from notes. Yeah. Yeah.
But you saw the right go after Bill Clinton, you know, for the Monica Lewinsky thing, but his approval ratings shot up.
Right.
So why are they trying to find something else to go after?
Again.
Exactly.
Right.
I don't understand that. Don't they get history?
No.
Well, apparently not. Don't we have a quote from Mitch McConnell about his?
Yes.
This is his response to the president's inaugural address, which is, by the way, not the State of the Union, not a presentation of policy or whatever, but an overall view of the presidency from his point of view about what he is committed to over the next 4 years.
Having won.
And this is and
twice,
which was all about equality, about equal protection under the law, is one of the primary tenets of our. And this is what Mitch McConnell heard.
Right.
The era of liberalism is back, an unabashedly far left of center inauguration speech certainly brings back memories of the Democratic Party of ages past.
Well, then the electorate is far left, according to Mitch McConnell.
Exactly.
Right, because everything he said is soundly within the populace. I mean, arguably...
It's what President Obama ran on and won on.
People voted for, right?
Yes.
Right.
So, but this is their idea that somehow the myth of the center-right, he also mentioned that later in the same statement, was that the president is out of touch because clearly we are a center-right country. He said, actually, it was interesting, the words that Mitch McConnell used was, we still believe we are a center-right country.
We still believe
which
we
is
are.
Really interesting, because if you look at the polls at all in any legitimate way, you don't... That's not what you see, even in gay marriage, even amongst Republicans, even, you know, in gun, you know, in background checks, you're seeing the 70% of gun owners saying they're for universal background checks at gun shows and to private sales. They have no problem with it whatsoever. It is soundly in that direction. And yet, if you ask Mitch McConnell what it was, he would probably tell you the opposite is true, that 30% are for it and 70% are against it, and vehemently so, and believe their Second Amendment rights are taken away by that very act.
We still believe we're in the 19th. Central.
Exactly.
Well, it's taking him so long to walk to the 20th century because he's a turtle.
Time moves more slowly when you're a reptile.
It's amazing that they're the hare in this situation, though. That's the funny thing. They're racing ahead and wearing themselves out with nonsense. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. Jackie Schechter is with us. We've got a lot of calls, by the way, about the abortion issue that came up in the very first segment.
Let's talk about that.
We'll answer a lot of those questions after we come back.
Stephanie Miller.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. On that note, in studio with us, Keep singing, Jim. I'm not going to interrupt you. I want to hear it. Unlike how it normally goes around here, where you get shut down, that's not going to happen. Yes,
the MOOCs have taken control. Yeah,
absolutely, it is a.
We control the vertical. We control the horizontal.
It's a MOOC coup, which is very difficult to say without choking yourself today. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm co-filling in with the lovely and talented Jackie Schechner.
I'm multitasking
today.
Yes, here,
absolutely, and of course, Chris and Jim are in studio with us today, and of course, recovering from their lack of balls this weekend.
Yes, we didn't.
Didn't have any balls. You of all people did not have any balls this
weekend? I did not have any balls this weekend.
There were no, other than the normal amount.
He usually has more balls than the rest of us.
Well, yeah, in your life.
But I'm not a ball goer.
Is that the technical term? I apparently am. You
zipped from ball to ball.
I did. I had balls all
over
the place.
Lots of balls.
I did juggle.
Ball hopping.
Yes, I was.
All right.
Have we pushed it too far?
Yeah,
have we
gone?
I went to the green ball. There was the ball for the Washington.
Was there a blue ball?
Huh?
There are no blue balls.
There was no blue balls. No
but
blue
apparently
balls.
Some balls were better than others.
Yes. Sure. Well, that's true.
We had a really good time at the museum for the green ball.
Oh, yeah. Joe Biden showed up and Jackie stepped on my foot.
I did. That was actually really funny.
As the Secret Service was shuffling us out of the way. They're like, please step back. And I'm like, I would, but Jackie Schechner is standing on my foot.
I stabbed him with a stiletto.
It's true.
Oh, my God.
And Roland texted me and said, get back here quick. It's Vice President Biden. And as I rushed in my fury.
Yeah, that's when they were shoving everybody out.
They were shoving me back, and Hal couldn't move.
You would expect that you would be able to bum rush a room with the second most powerful person in the most powerful country in the world.
I heard Biden and got really excited. It was like the Beatles.
Excuse me. I know you have a Secret Service pin and a little earpiece, and you can talk into your wrist, but I have a VIP laminate from the green ball. That entitles me the ability
to... And a hot dress.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I thought that got me in.
Jackie was backless.
I was.
She was backless Jackie. Oh, it was hard not to get a picture taken with her and not have feel your hand drift lower.
Yeah.
That was a hard one.
Yeah.
That was very difficult.
And you were in a tux. First time I've ever seen you in a tux. I
tied my own bow tie.
You did.
Thank you very much.
You were very excited about that.
I was very proud of that several times.
Did you have to Google how to do that, or had you known?
I had known, but I also YouTubed it.
YouTubed it.
Yeah, just to make sure I wasn't doing it. Because I didn't have time to mess it up.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
By the way, 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number, and of course, right now, Secretary Clinton is still testifying at the Benghazi hearing. We have a lot of calls, though, about not only the inauguration, but in the first segment, Dana from Maryland called in because she'd been to the Sexy Liberal Show and brought up the abortion issue, and a bunch of people have called in.
It's the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade,
Which
is why this is also appropriate. We're talking about it. It's always appropriate, but we're talking about it more because we just had the 40th anniversary of Roe
v. Wade. And the president's mentioning of women's rights and equal pay, especially in his inaugural address, was an amazing step forward.
Everything
as well.
About that address was amazing.
It was like whack-a-mole against the Republican agenda.
Usually we're used to like the moderates or same old stuff, but this was hard-hitting and left.
This hit every single point. Interestingly enough, it was the one moment I will say that I kind of agreed with Karl Rove on something. Because Karl Rove's response to the inauguration was predictable.
He put out this ad. Crossroads GPS put out this ad.
Yeah.
Some are calling the president's address the most liberal he's delivered. I think the most liberal speech Barack Obama has ever given.
Much more radical than the speech he gave 4 years ago.
He doesn't have to stand for re-election again.
This is clearly a president who is not running for re-election.
Unapologetically liberal.
Yay!
Good.
I'm good with that.
Karl Rove put out that ad as a pejorative.
Right, exactly.
That's all complimentary.
You know what that reminds me of? Do you remember the ad they did where they said the president was like the biggest celebrity and they showed all these moments of him being really cool and really smart and funny? Exactly. And I kept thinking, that's an attack ad?
Right, exactly.
It makes him look kind of awesome.
He's smart! I hate smart! The only place it's an attack ad is at,
is at Fox.
Yeah, Fox and, old white men.
Right.
I think
there could have been a nice rebuttal an ad put out with just Bush with his pretzel-oriented Band-Aid on his head not opening the door right when he was trying to escape that press conference. And won't get fooled again. quoting the Who and, you know, and messing up that.
He did that dance where he was doing that weird, awkward.
He was the man of the people.
On the drum dance.
That's actually been one of the, in response to the speech, one of the consistent refrains, and they've kind of put this up, this is a continuation of a narrative they're trying to push, was that he's isolated. That he lives in this kind of cocoon because that's where they live. And so right. The idea is the Karl Rove system is if you're going to lie, call somebody a liar before you start doing it. Because then they go, wait a minute, you just lied. And, you go, and then it becomes this, it sounds 50-50. It sounds like two people arguing about who's lying.
It's a strategy.
It is. It's absolutely. And unfortunately, it is one that CNN often will tip up for you.
Both sides do it.
Yeah, right. And then we'll have to
leave it there.
Right. Exactly. But that, you know, that's the goal. That's the idea. So if they're going to live in an insulated bubble where they don't listen to the polls and they're not aware of what the American people are interested in or want to accomplish in the next 4 years, the first stage will be saying that the president lives in a bubble and doesn't. And Bill O'Reilly last night. That was a big chunk of his. This guy is clearly isolated from the rest of the world, and he's removed from people, and he's not. He's all, and it's they. He's they have a real hard time calling him, you know, intellectual about it because that's the, you know, the Vulcan aspect of this president that they keep trying to float doesn't jibe with their. But clearly, those people are inferior. Intellectually, part that their viewership wants to see. Yeah. The code doesn't match up with what they're selling sometimes. So it's really funny watching them trying to wiggle them together and trying to meet. It's like
Look
Doc
how
Brown
smart
at,
he is.
At the
I
end
want
of Back
my
to the
president
future.
To be smarter
I do
than
too.
I am.
Oh, absolutely. I the idea that, you know, Bush is one of his.
Who does he
one
think
of his
he
I
is.
Saw Idiocracy. This doesn't end well.
No. And Bush was in bed by 9:30. That was a point of pride with him. Like, I can wrap this. What's required of being the president of the United States, I could handle by 9:30, and I'll be in bed.
Obama had an after party at the White House. He was up until 4 in the morning.
Absolutely.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
You go.
I do 2 minutes of news at the top of the hour, and I stay up late.
Right, exactly.
Oh, he's so smart and tireless.
Right.
And hardworking.
Right.
What am I saying exactly? Oh,
yeah, how are we supposed
boy.
To do a 4 a.m. call against a guy who's probably still awake?
Right. Right.
How can you make the point that he'll groggily answer the phone? P.S., the two guys we ran, if you look at, you know, McCain, imagine calling that man at 4 o'clock in the morning and asking him anything.
No.
I mean, seriously.
No.
Huh?
Who is this?
Yeah. Huh? Click.
Get off my lawn.
Right, get off my line.
Right. Mr. President, are you awake? Can you, we have an emergency. There's troops are, there's a nuclear submarine.
I couldn't hear you. My goiter got in the way.
So, you know, and then Mitt Romney, if you take that picture of him pumping gas on the way to Disneyland as any sign of how he handles stress.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
he turns into a hobo.
Yeah, right. Hobo powers activate. Form of a confused, staggering man on the train. Let's actually. This is interesting too because while the inauguration was going, let's go to Sean in Chicago because he's been holding for a bit. Sean in Chicago is aware of what the Republicans were doing.
Oh, that's right. I heard about this. Yeah. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey guys.
Good morning.
Hey everybody. Good morning. I love you guys. Love you guys. You start my morning before work every day. I love you.
We try.
I was just piggybacking off of what you said, about how while we're not paying attention, we're paying so much attention to what the president is doing. The Republicans in these states are really just really trying to mess up things for re-elections for any Democrats that are for elections that are coming up anytime soon or in 2016. They just yesterday, Rachel Maddow was showing how they're in Virginia. There's a 2020 split between the representatives of the state and how they waited purposely for one of the
lieutenant governor to not be there so he couldn't break the tie. Yeah.
Right. And one of the actual representatives actually went to the inauguration.
Right. And so it became 2019. Yeah.
Yeah, 2019, yeah, and when I saw that on top of all the other states, the other four states that are going through this, I said, this is just absolutely horrendous, and what can we do about it? But I know we can protest, I know we can, you know, do legislation, I mean, write to our politicians.
Yeah.
and things like that. But what good will it really do when the Republicans run the House?
Well,
I mean, they run.
Clearly, for the first time, this is the first time I've seen the president, a president that I'm aware of, mention voting rights in their speech as well. I mean, and not just in the abstract. You know, it, like obviously it was mentioned during the time of the Civil Rights Act and the voting changes that occurred then. But since then, we've heard no mention of the right to vote in this country being a protected right and the sanctity of that idea. And I think the only thing, first of all, we got to remember, we vote every 2 years in this country, not every four. And that needs to be the refrain from every time you talk about an election. Anybody in the within the sound of my voice needs to when they talk about voting or any of those things or what's going to happen in the next election, you're not talking about 2016, you're talking about 2014, and that those often matter more so because that's when they sneak these folks through.
Yeah,
that's when purple districts turn red because people are looking the other way or are too busy. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. Son Stephanie Miller, because she's away celebrating her mom's 90th birthday.
She'll be back tomorrow, though.
She will.
Yes.
I'm sorry. That's inappropriate.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Would you like some hummus?
Yes, well, okay, I did walk the dinosaur at the Sexy Liberal Show in D.C.
You did T-Rex.
I did. But, you know, it's a cautionary tale.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And one that I think you kind of have to see. Even though that bit is on the album, it's the only one I really repeat at any of the Sexy Liberal Shows because it's...
it's the one everybody asks for and it's, everybody remembers it.
I get requests.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're playing the hits.
It was yes, exactly. Yeah,
I feel like Jumpin' Jack Flash.
Yeah, I feel like a Styx reunion.
When you have to play Babe.
Exactly.
Babe, I love you.
So romantic it is, isn't it? So we have, by the way, tons of calls, but I want to go to Keith in Texas because this is an important part of what's coming up. This is, you know, instead of what's the news today is about what the news is going to be. And, you know, but let's go to Keith in Texas. Hey, Keith.
Hey, great talking to you.
Yeah.
And I've got a very, very, very important issue that we need to respond to now.
Right.
First thing I did this morning was call Harry Reid's office because I do not have a senator living in Texas.
Right.
I mean, I'm totally without representation if you get right down to it.
Oh, I understand.
The only way my congressman will talk to me is if I give him money.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
isn't that usually how most congressmen are?
Yeah, but there's a few of them, you know. They're
paid by the word.
Seriously, folks.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got to talk about filibuster reform.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we're on a short fuse with.
Mm-hmm.
We've only got about 2 days, about a day and a half to deal with it.
Yep.
We've got to convince Harry Reid that he can't get a compromise with Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell has lied to him and lied to him and lied to him.
Right.
There's an old saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Right.
Well, Harry, you're in that shame on me portion.
Absolutely. It's a great point. And this is something, by the way, that we can all take part in.
That's right.
This is, I mean, Harry Reid as the Senate Majority Leader, especially if you're a Democrat or Republican or progressive, he represents you. He's he's the spearhead for all senatorial business. So you don't have to call your senator only. You can call your senator, have them bug him, and
exactly.
call his office too.
Yes. They have the direct line.
Absolutely. Yes. They can go, I'm hearing from my folks, and you're hearing from my
That's
folks.
Right. That's
this,
right.
And it's so important.
That's right. And Harry Reid spoke about this yesterday.
Yeah. I've had some positive meetings with Senator McConnell before the recess. During the recess, our staff's worked on this. We had another meeting today, and I hope within the next 24 to 36 hours we can get something that we agree on. If not, we're going to move forward on what I think needs to be done. The caucus will support me on that.
So if you don't get agreement, does that mean you'll move forward with a 51 vote?
Yes.
There you go.
All right.
That's it. Okay. If they're not, and as long as it involves a talking filibuster, I think the majority of people will be comfortable with the rest of it kind of falling away. That primary change. Because at a certain point, this is the part I don't understand. And maybe somebody can call in about this. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, of course. By the way, I'm Hal Sparks, and Jackie Schechner and Chris LaVoy and Jim Ward and I are all trying to fill the giant gap left by Steph being out for one single day. We're doing our best.
It takes a village.
Absolutely. Right. We're building our little, we're like our gang. We're kind of putting this little wagon together and trying to get it to roll down the hill.
I'll be Spanky.
Yeah. Yes, you will, actually. I've heard that.
I've heard that about you. Yeah.
That's what you were doing instead of going to balls this weekend.
apparently. Yeah. I was also drinking a whole bottle of vodka.
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. Well,
is that the rumor?
No, that's the truth. That's the reality.
Wow.
That's the truth.
Is that what it takes to get a guy your size drunk?
Well, yeah, apparently. So.
Yeah. Well, elephant darts? Or...
My friend Jeff is a bartender, and so I went to his bar and parked myself.
It was one of those airplane bottles.
And, he kept putting drinks down in front of me. I kept drinking them.
Uh-huh.
You know, and,
as you do.
And apparently I drank almost an entire bottle of Sky Vodka.
Huh. Well, that's luckily, you know, it's D.C., so everything's watered down.
Well, I suppose.
But I think, you know, at a certain point, they'd need a Jurassic Park level of, you know, sedation to bring you down. You know, shoot her! Shoot her! It's like, what was that? Yeah, can I have another bottle of water? That was vodka. Oh.
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 Oh. All right.
Okay.
That's fine. Literally, everyone help me.
In relation to this, let's go to John in Pennsylvania. Hey, John. Are you there, John, in Pennsylvania? Hi.
Yes, hi.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello. Go ahead.
Is this Hal?
It is. You're talking to me. And your radio's up a little bit. I can hear it in the background.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Fire away. Go ahead.
All right. First of all, real quick, I just wanted to say, I am such a huge fan of yours.
Oh, thanks.
I'm a fan of your music, your acting, your comedy. So I just wanted to throw that
out. I just like the way
there.
You wear your hair.
Yeah.
We got a fanboy on the line.
That's awesome. But my question is, I personally can't think of any other period in time where we've had a Democratic president where Republicans are just... They're stonewalling him on every issue.
Right.
Have we ever had a president? I can't think of one.
By the numbers, absolutely not. I mean, if you look at any chart of the use of the filibuster, the use of anonymous holds, and any kind of, you know, using the 60 vote line to get stuff through, it is unprecedented to a percentage. I mean, we're talking 200% higher than it's ever been. I mean, it's the charts are hilarious to look at if they were not so sad.
It used to be
a methodology. The filibuster used to be part of the methodology to protect the minority from the majority, and there's value in that. Anybody who's been in the majority, you know, knows that there's strength that comes with that. That takes a level of responsibility that these guys often don't have. But if anybody's ever been in a minority position, which, by the way, includes almost any kind of new social movement or any new technology, you're kind of you know. Right now, wind and solar are overwhelmed by oil. There's no question about that or whatever. And there is a tyranny of majority in the tax breaks that the oil companies get and all that. Mm-hmm. And so there needs to be a protection in our representative government to make sure that those things don't get squashed simply because the old system is bigger and more entrenched. And we have that in social areas. We have that in several. And the filibuster was there to protect it. And the Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which Ezra Klein says is one of the and I thank you for the call, by the way. The line's noisy, so I'm going to let you go. Yep. But the Ezra Klein continually hates that movie. He's saying more and more. The more he sees it, the more he hates it because it is
there's never been a filibuster like that.
Right.
Ever.
Right. The closest one was Bernie Sanders, actually,
right.
Who wrote a book on the floor.
Right.
He did. He released his filibuster as a book. You know, it was so long, but it wasn't a genuine filibuster. It was actually a hold of the floor. It didn't, it wasn't about one particular bill. It didn't hold up that particular, you know, thing. It wasn't a traditional one where he went, I've got to stop this particular thing.
Yeah.
It was almost a lesson in how to filibuster, positively and, you know, but.
All right, sir, I guess I'll just have to speak to the people of my state from right here. And I'll tell you one thing, that wild horses aren't going to drag me off this floor until those people have heard everything I've got to say, even if it takes all winter.
Filibuster! Filibuster! filibuster.
Right.
Mr. Potter, you're nothing but a warped, frustrated old man.
Right. I don't mind getting back to that. And I think if that was the single change, it would be worth it.
I think so.
There are other ones that need to be had. We'll talk about that after we come back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
All right now. That's right, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks along with Jackie Schechner and Chris
Lavoy.
The boy toy, LaVoy, executive producer. Well, I don't know how you can do both, but you are. You're boy toy and EP. It's amazing.
Well, she just tells me to show up and wear something tight. So that's what I do.
No comment.
As he crosses his arms over his chest.
Absolutely.
And hides his pecs.
To push his his pecs forward.
I'm hiding my shame.
He's still in airplane seat mode. And of course, voice deity Jim Ward. Who is, of course, as usual, scrolling bikini pictures on his laptop. As anybody who
or formulating a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, Russian volcanoes.
Which, by the way, we have to do a minor, like a small conspiracy corner with Jim and I at the, in the next hour, at least just for a few minutes, mm-hmm. just because we haven't done it in so long.
Oh, I know.
And there's so many good ones out there. And especially with all that ridiculous Alex Jones nonsense that was going on,
You've been on the show.
Yeah, talking this nonsense. Okay, so the two big stories coming up, not only right now is Hillary Clinton speaking, Secretary Clinton is actually speaking at the Benghazi hearing, and her initial statement from what we heard kind of was a whack-a-mole of conspiracy theories around Benghazi, just one after the other, and actually recalled that one of the harshest moments in the debates where Mitt Romney said, "You said act of terror, whatever." Read the transcripts, please proceed, Governor. Would you like another shovel, Governor?
You can still see the top of your head.
How does your foot taste?
Exactly. Yeah, and she mentioned that the fact that. Not only did he say it, but she also referenced it the very next day. They also mentioned the fact that they were having all these, because of the video, they were having a lot of just riots in the streets and demonstrations and the like. And there was this idea that in the Benghazi attack, it was either an al-Qaeda-based terrorist attack on one of our embassies, period. Or it was a riot about a video.
Both.
But the truth is... Yeah. Like most intelligence gathering will tell you, somewhere in the middle, mm-hmm. and what it looks more and more like, and what the CIA's report on it came out as saying was that it was an Al Qaeda linked group taking advantage, and having the tacit cover that would allow them to even get close. That there were all these riots all over the place. That that it was almost expected at these different sites. So they may have. You walk down the street with a bunch of Molotov cocktails when nothing else is going on, they shut you down six blocks away. If it's happening all over the place, they're kind of, oh, here they come. They're going to be waving flags and complaining, and they've got the right to do that. We're in their country, and oh, my gosh, it's actually a...
Have we ruled out the possibility that they were somehow complicit in spreading that clip of the movie? That there was somehow...
The right wing, you mean?
Well, not necessarily the right wing, but if there was some sort of terrorist group that was looking for cover at the time, that they could have... Because we
hadn't...
It's
too easy to do, right.
Right, like we hadn't heard of the movie here. And,
no.
And when it came out of the blue and it said that the Muslim world was outraged at this movie...
We're like, what movie?
What movie?
As
if we'd like made it here, shown it here, we're like screening it across the country, that it was this big popular American movie.
Understand the social structure and the entertainment structure of the Middle East versus the United States, we have a very obvious distinction between films and television. In India, they do not necessarily as much, and that's why there are so many Bollywood movies, because in a lot of areas, there just aren't TV stations and the like, so people go to the movies every week like we did in the 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where you go for your visual entertainment, and you do it all the time. You could go every other day if you wanted to and see another movie.
But this was like a clip on YouTube.
Right.
This wasn't even an actual...
But the idea was that it was an American movie. So it's very easy to float in that portion of the world that this is a movie that's in theaters in the United States, and this is what they really think.
And that could have been the
it's too easy to do.
The flames of that fire right. could have been fueled by a group looking for cover mm-hmm. to right. attack our consulate
Absolutely.
In Benghazi.
And giving them any kind of protection because of that is the problem. That's, you know, it's not allowing for that to be a genuine part of the conversation when you're having, you know, these Benghazi hearings and going, look, people take advantage of the fact that we have a knee-jerk reaction politically against each other.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility. I mean, it was interesting to see how post 9/11 and during the Iraq and Afghan wars, during the first, you know, especially during the first 6 years of them, which covered the re-election of Bush, that there was, and I think more than most of us were comfortable with, Democrats going, you know what, I'm not going to overtly criticize the president and his policies too much because we are at war and there is an enemy that wants to do a major terrorist attack on the level of 9/11 again, and I don't want to be the last guy who spoke before it happened.
Yeah.
Arguably, there's somewhere between that. It's why TSA people didn't smile at anybody for a long time because they were afraid there'd be video of them smiling at the guy who walked through and blew the plane up. Mm-hmm. And so there was an initial reaction to 9/11 that was hyper-conservative in the traditional
and
sense of the word.
Deferential.
Right, deferential, right. That's gone. And even though we are still trying to wind down the Afghanistan war, even during the time that the president was winding down the Iraq war, mm-hmm. the idea that we are not intending to get into another one, that we are in the process of trying to not have to put troops in another country, and the president is actively engaged in very delicate conversations with other countries, UN and NATO forces, Iran themselves through surrogates and other countries, so that we don't have to pack 1.4 million of our citizens over there in 9 engagements again and again
right,
and again.
On a fifth tour.
Yeah, right. So we don't have to do that. There's nothing from the right wing saying, you know what, I have problems with the domestic policies of this president or whatever, but I'm not going to open up the door where I'm going to call him a Muslim. I'm just not going to do that, you know, and make it both a pejorative or accusatory.
But don't you think that this is all in line with the inherent lack of disrespect they seem to have for this president?
The lack of respect, yeah.
I mean, lack of respect, right?
Yeah, yeah. The inherent disrespect
or lack of respect, yes.
I think there's two reasons why they have a lack of respect for him. One is they can't have respect for him and then get reelected later. It's in their mind.
But it's worse now than it's ever been with any other Democratic
president. I agree, because there's something knee-jerk and guttural about it. But if you look at their vilification of Bill Clinton, we forget because the economy, we didn't go through a major snap during that time
right.
like we did now. And certainly not coming in. We had just the original Iraq war lasted 21 days, 19 days, effectively 21 with the troops removal. Mm-hmm. That was over before Clinton came in.
Right. That was amazing.
Yeah. But it was also, you know, it was arguably more of a wag the dog situation, you know, than almost any other conflict. I mean, there was.
Yeah. And it was different because.
It was based on slant drilling, effectively.
I mean,
that was a war about slant drillings. Iraq was slant drilling right. into.
Well, yeah. And, you know, we went into a country that was being invaded by another country. We didn't go into the country that was invading, you know. So.
Yeah.
There were two different kinds
totally,
of wars.
Absolutely. And in the case of Iraq this time around, never attacked us.
Right.
Never invaded us.
Right.
Never had the capability of attacking or invading.
And, you know, we told Saddam Hussein he could go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
April Glaspie.
We have no opinion on your
border dispute.
Exactly. And we gave him, I think, $6 billion,
yeah.
Six, 90 days before the Iraq war began.
Right.
And gave tacit agreement to allow him to do these mm-hmm. things. And then as soon as he did them, jumped on it. That being said, Bill Clinton, even though he was in a section of the 90s where we didn't have... a 9/11. We didn't have a tech bubble burst on a major mm-hmm. level. This was really a season of prosperity in a couple of different fronts. And so our arguments that we saw didn't have a hinge point. They were fights picked intentionally, yeah. arguably. The second term of Clinton, don't forget how Newt Gingrich and those guys, how they viewed him as the destruction of the moral character of the presidency. This is how they defined him. Mm-hmm. This had two goals.
Gingrich.
Right, exactly. The guy with four husbands who said to his wife or his girlfriend.
Four wives. That would be
four wives?
Scandal.
Yeah.
He said four husbands.
Sorry.
that would be a scandal.
That's another big Republican. Yeah. That he's been a husband four times.
Yeah.
But also was one of these guys who, said to his, I believe it was his girlfriend slash mistress, while he still had one of the wives at the time, said, it's not what I do, it's what I say that's important.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think they let Clinton off the hook. I just think it's so off the charts how they're doing it with Obama that we kind of forget how much they vilified Clinton for a ridiculous offense in the annals of history, right. on the level of what could be high crimes and misdemeanors, what they really went after for,
right.
Especially considering it started as a multi-million dollar waste of time looking for a land deal that never
exactly
worked. Right. It was the classic bureaucratic drift.
Yep,
that the Republicans apparently supposedly hate.
They kept this one going.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't find something here. They kind of drifted over here.
Absolutely. And it ended up being about simply a sexual act.
It was actually the orals of history.
Yes, right. That's a good point.
Oh, for the love of...
What, too soon?
Too soon.
No wonder you didn't get to go to any balls this weekend.
We can't take you anywhere.
We can't take you. Yeah. So let's take a break. We'll be back right after this with more of your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechter, Jim Ward, and Chris LaVoy filling in for Steph. While she's out today, she'll be back tomorrow. But we'll be back right after this.
She was abandoned by wolves and raised by Republicans. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Time. You can't touch this. Yo, sound the bell. School's in, sucker. You can't touch this.
Actually, you can. For just $29.95, actually.
For the price of a cup of coffee.
Yeah. You can touch this. The StephCast, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
$4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance.
There
you go. Or $7.95 a month if you have a fear of commitment.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. I can only take this on a month-to-month level. Just if I have to keep hearing some of this nonsense.
I'm going to want to see other radio programs.
Before we get to the big Republican punt, did you guys see this?
The epic eye roll?
Yeah, the epic eye roll story from Michelle Obama.
Amazing.
The story in Huffington Post, interesting, says First Lady not amused by President's banter with John Boehner.
Right.
So it was basically that they were trying to have like a shared moment. It's her body language as she's eating. Like, it's
like, get him
away from me. Right. which isn't that different from his wife who's on the other side of him.
Right.
Boehner's wife.
Oh, in that same video, you can kind of see Mrs. Boehner maybe... grabbing some silverware and putting it in her purse.
No.
I think she just spilled on her lap and she's brushing something.
I prefer to think the other.
Is this sweet and low free?
Well, it's kind of, you can't say it.
Grab a roll.
If I was at the inaugural luncheon, I'd take a glass or something. Just it's like an ashtray from the,
right.
We went on a White House tour and drank the water and I was excited.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you're
it's like being the golden child.
This water's filtered for the President.
I bet this could kill a vampire.
This came directly from the Potomac.
It did, absolutely. Unfiltered, straight from that.
But regarding this story,
yes.
the eye-rolling story, apparently Inside Edition, purveyor of everything journalistic, hired a lip reader to see John Boehner was saying. And apparently... let's see. The lip reader believes that John Boehner is asking President Obama whether he had a chance to have a cigarette before the luncheon. And then Boehner tapped the First Lady on the arm before telling the president that somebody won't let you do it.
Oh wow. Gosh.
Wow. And then
when she rolled her eyes.
Yeah.
Understandably so.
By the way, this goes back to Bush as well.
He's got you on a short leash, doesn't he? Oh.
Famously, Bush's appearance on the Letterman show when in the initial run in 99, 2000, around that time, he There was a female producer who came on to set to give notes to Letterman during the break. And Bush cleaned his glasses on her dress.
Oh, God.
A woman he
really?
Did not know. And Letterman goes, after he left, Letterman goes, we don't normally do this. We don't normally play what happens during the break, but I want everybody to see this. And you can look it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Bush, a woman he did not know, grabbed the hem of her skirt and cleaned his glasses. Who does that?
This was W or the senior Bush? Okay.
W. Yeah. Bush would, senior would have just barfed on her and apologized.
Well, yeah.
But W, I mean, imagine some guy doing that at a bar or a guy you don't know grabs the hem of your skirt and cleans his glasses with them.
Wow. That's an a-hole move.
Oh, my God.
I am mortified.
I know.
Like, I don't even know what to say.
I know. And I'm sure. And
that's not even the worst thing you did.
No, not at all. But, I mean, that's stunning. And Boehner, feeling like he can touch the first lady. They don't hang. They don't go to dinner. This isn't a couple.
They don't socialize at all.
Right.
They don't know each other.
You don't touch a woman you don't have a relationship with.
Especially
you just don't.
She's the first lady.
Right. And at a luncheon.
Next to her husband.
And you certainly don't hand bump her with your arm like you're at a sporting event and they went to the game with you. That's.
And talk about her like she's not there. Someone will let you do it.
Yeah. Right. The nag. I mean.
It smacks of the inherent Republican disrespect for women.
Absolutely.
Right. It's stunning. I mean, that.
And boners I mean, you can treat Marsha Blackburn like that. What do you don't treat?
But if Kay Bailey Hutchinson hangs out at your house all the time because you guys are on the same caucus and on occasion, and you caucus together.
That sounds a lot dirtier
than it
should. That's fine,
it is. But I guess to some degree, there's a tacit social openness to that, and she, that's fine. But
she's still the first lady of the United States,
right.
too. I mean, it's not just that he's being disrespectful to a woman.
Right.
He's being inherently disrespectful to the president's
wife, totally agree.
First lady.
To the president. He's saying, hey, she's got you in a short leash, huh, pal?
Right.
We'll let you smoke.
here's the thing. I think, regardless of the, I think you're absolutely right about the first lady aspect of it. But I also think that it doesn't matter.
No, of course.
If you introduce me to a friend of yours and we're out to dinner or whatever, I don't lean over and smack her on the arm to further a joke to get her attention or whatever. I don't know this person. I don't hang out with this person regularly. We don't have a history together.
No.
It's something you, out of respect for another human being, you don't do. I wouldn't do that with a guy I don't know.
No,
it's weird.
I don't think you would wipe your glasses on your girlfriend's dress.
Right. That's amazing. Like, what kind of a scumbag? Anyway, that drove me nuts.
Your frock.
Yes, is my property. And here she is, a producer on the Letterman show, and he's a presidential candidate and the son of a president.
Yeah.
And the ambassador to China and the head of the CIA. But we'll get to that later when Jim and I talk.
Well, of course, this is the guy who gave a shoulder rub to Angela Merkel.
Right.
Like,
yes.
What? Get off
went
me.
To the prime minister.
What's wrong with you?
Of Germany.
Germany.
Yeah.
And he runs up and gives her a shoulder rub randomly at a meeting.
Yeah without telling her.
Right.
It's surprising her.
This is part of that thing. And then what did the Republicans, what did they just do? They just had a retreat at a former plantation.
In Virginia,
In Virginia.
To learn not to talk about rape.
how to talk to women and minorities better.
Wow.
Don't mention rape.
Yeah.
You have to be told to be less rapey.
Right. Well, if you have to be told to be less rapey, you really shouldn't be holding office.
I got news for you. Rape should be discussed in this country. We should have a conversation
about it. But we shouldn't.
But don't dismiss it.
Right.
Someone
That's the
don't
difference.
Joke about it.
Right.
Someone tried to give the funeral to Necra once and he invaded Poland.
And I got.
Too soon.
Yes. Really? You've been. 60 years. All right. I will say
can't
that
get through a show
everybody
who
says
reference.
Right. I do take issue with the idea that we don't joke about rape in this country because we always do. That actually, rape is one of the most hack common jokes you'll ever hear, but it's done about men going to prison, so nobody flinches.
That's
about
true. The prison rape joke.
The single prison, the single most common joke.
Is it really
used in every cop movie you'll see?
Yeah.
Every
The don't drop the soap.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
The don't drop the soap.
That's
probably
a prison rape.
It's a prison rape joke. It's about a man being raped once he goes to jail.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. But since joking is often built on the concept of it's okay to joke up, not down.
Right.
You don't joke about someone in a station lower than you in life or with less advantage.
That's why Dennis Miller isn't funny.
Yeah, well, that's
one
true.
Of the reasons.
That's why Republicans aren't funny.
Right, because they know Dennis Miller and they hang out with him. He writes for them, and he's even less funny than they are. Yeah, you heard it. We'll be back right after this. More of the House Parks fill-in version. I'm just for Newsbusters.
Right, okay.
Yeah, you hear that, Dennis? Okay, we'll be back with more of the Stephanie Miller Show right after this.
Stephanie Miller
thinks that she has the key to popularity, parking in cars with the boys at night. When Jerry brags about taking
Stephanie Miller
out, he learns that she dates all the boys, and he feels less important.
I don't know. I think you got to earn your keep, don't you?
Well,
I mean, if she dates all the boys, it gives you more impetus to stand out. I mean, you want to talk about bootstrapping.
She hasn't dated boys since the early 90s.
That's true, but even then, I mean, you want to be the... Let's say a
Does she park in cars with
she
girls?
Dates, yeah, she dates all the girls. It just gives you more reason to develop your skills and be interesting.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Right.
Speaking as someone who's skated on charm for decades now, the adversity of not being the tallest guy in the room or the quarterback or whatever, those kind of things,
yep,
ends up, I think, training you to be a more interesting person later in life. I mean, you'll never get a Bruce Springsteen song written about you in that regard.
Glory days.
it's where they... Oh, by the way, in shocking news, is this... Paul Ryan hated Obama's speech. That's right. He accused the president of using a straw man argument.
And he's the president, straw man.
Is a proud and confident, liberal progressive... he invokes the Constitution and the Declaration at times, which are something that everybody likes to hear, especially, conservatives. But he invoked them as a means to sort of legitimize the agenda he has going forward, which was, fairly partisan, very ideological for sure. And, that's just, it doesn't surprise me that he did that because he's basically saying, I'm a liberal and I'm going to govern as a liberal and I won. And so there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And your point is?
He ran
as a liberal. He won as a liberal.
Well, liberals wouldn't say he ran as a liberal, though.
No. Well,
liberals wouldn't say that at all.
Not at all. Nor would they say that the speech was inherently, overtly liberal in some sort of way. Here's the problem. There are two people involved in a communication exchange. The person speaking and the person listening. And both play a part in the conversation. And it should come as no surprise that Paul Ryan hears what he wants to hear. Mm-hmm. And his former would-be boss, Mitt Romney, hears what he wants to hear. Mm-hmm. And both of them have a legacy of intentionally obfuscating things that they hear themselves.
Ooh, good word.
Stuffing their ears with wax so that they don't have to hear the real story. And in this case, he heard, first of all, the idea that he goes, conservatives especially like the invocation of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. I would disagree. I think, liberals and progressives are huge fans of the Constitution. We just, interestingly enough, I think the Constitution sides with us more often than it does with the Republicans, and especially of the ilk that Paul Ryan comes from, because if it didn't, they wouldn't have to bring it up so often.
By Constitution, they mean the Second Amendment.
Right, exactly. And even that, the well-regulated part will ignore that part of it. Freedom of speech.
Because that's inconvenient.
Yeah, freedom of speech is great, except when somebody shoots up a school with, and has high capacity magazines and the like, and is planning on doing a mass shooting, and they use these kind of things. The important thing is to go after video games and movies.
Yeah.
And all the while calling Democrats the ones who favor a nanny state. Is there anything more nanny-ish in a state act than stopping what you can see or hear in entertainment? I mean, honestly.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
If there's two things a nanny does, feed you and entertain you, that are major. The cleaning part, which will, sanitation, sewage being what it is, using the analogy, that's kind of sound and left off to the side. But in all honesty, Paul Ryan heard what he wanted to hear out of this thing, and this idea that he made this partisan agenda, it really was because he got called out.
Right.
Paul Ryan got called out in that speech. His constant referring about takers in this country, and he had to walk that back while pouting about what the president said.
It's very hard to take a man seriously after he's posed for a spread in his gym shorts. Holding a weight with
Don't talk about me like I'm not here. Look, there is nothing wrong with trying out for a boy band in the 90s and
right,
doing
the appropriate
hat. Yeah, right.
And he had a weight in his hand and there was nothing to his bicep.
Yeah. Right. But he has muscle confusion.
The P90X.
Yes, absolutely.
I do. Every time we talk about him, I picture that ridiculous spread that he was
with his hat turned backwards and his hand out.
Hey, bro.
Yes.
Hey, bro.
Frat boy, bro.
Yeah. Where's the other four guys in the boy band who are there? Like,
step by step.
Oh, God.
This is the amazing. He goes, no one is. This was his response when he was asked about Obama's.
Smoke and Jay in the chat room says Paul Ryan has a butt hurt. Poor little fella.
Oh, way. He's in the nook nook crowd.
Yeah.
He has the same hair as Sean Hannity. Just different color tone. You know, I think is age related color tone. But
do it.
Going on. But he goes, no one is suggesting that we call our earned entitlements you pay for, like payroll taxes for Medicare and Social Security, are putting you in a taker category.
That's exactly
what he did. When you say 47%, and then you back it up by saying actually 53% of the country are takers, and anybody who doesn't pay income tax is a taker, that's what he was saying, flat out. Well, that includes every vet. Every retired vet, every retired person in this entire country, anybody on disability, anybody who receives government, including, by the way, Paul Ryan. For those of you that don't recall, Paul Ryan's father passed away when he was a young man, and he received Social Security
government
benefits.
Assistance.
That's right.
Well, and he used that to go to college.
Yep.
And if he had not had that money from the government to pay for his college, he would more than likely not be in the U.S. House of Representatives.
Right. He'd be working in his family's construction company.
Which is probably the only liberal reason to curb entitlements that I can think of. But in reality, this is a guy who climbed into the lifeboat over the heads of other people, a fit, healthy young man from a relatively well-to-do family, had enough money in his life to not have to worry about it, took his Social Security survivor benefits and put them towards his education because he didn't need them for food. And this is a guy who crawled over other people to get in the lifeboat and is now kicking hands off the side. And then when he is called out for for the very words he used, he says the president is presenting a straw man argument. And then what do we have today from, okay, this is the guy, these are the constitutionalists, the deficit hawks, people who believe that it's very important that we deal with the real stories. What, you know, in the response to the president's inauguration, on Fox, they were all, where's the mention of the deficit, the despair, the helplessness, and stuff. Never mind, it was mentioned by Schumer and Edgar Evers' widow and every other person, and that, God forbid, the president's speech should be hopeful and point genuinely that America is going to survive, and we have reason to be hopeful.
That's right.
But in this, here's Paul Ryan getting called out.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys on the right saying, where's the real story, where is it, whatever. And so what's the first act of the House that they're going to do today? What's the big bill that's going through? Punting the debt ceiling. That's a vote is going to go through today.
Punting it down three more months. Yeah.
A three-month wait to deal with
because why get done today what you can put off for another day?
Exactly.
Because people are still glowing in the aftermath of the inauguration, because people are still, you know, are recognizing that the president... their message that the president isn't interested in deficits and handling it, because he did mention it in his inauguration, and he did mention doing it in a balanced approach, and the American people agree with him on that part. So if they have to act on it in the next week, people are still that much engaged.
Mm-hmm.
They're hoping in 3 months the American public will disengage enough for them to create another false narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about raising the debt ceiling, because it's something we have to do because we've already racked up the bills and we have to pay them.
Right.
And that's an obvious...
Absolutely.
It's just that's the fact.
Right.
And they like to combine the two, right, and make it about future spending and paying off the bills. And the president says it over and over and over again, but it doesn't stick.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why it doesn't stick, why people don't understand that they're two separate arguments. And I would imagine the Republicans are buying time so they can continue to mush them together again.
Well, it gives them leverage to say, okay, we're spending so much that we have to raise our credit limit, essentially. We should be able to not do that because we can cut in other areas. It's just going to, in their mind, they've been able to create this idea that all government ever does is balloon. We never contract it, which is not the case at all. You know, for all intents and purposes, and to anyone who actually looks at the measurement, governments shrink under Democrats and grow under Republicans. The debt that this president is dealing with, he had $1 trillion added to what the normal cost of government with all the problems that it had accrued during the Bush years, an extra $1 trillion for the Iraq and Afghanistan war.
Right.
And we have to pay for those. And instead of doing a World War II Marshall Plan kind of, we're all in this together, Rosie the Riveter, everybody go down, let's do scrap drives and don't eat as much meat so we have food to send to the troops who are overseas. We didn't do any of that. What we did was cut taxes on the wealthy and let everything slide.
Right.
And that's why we have to raise the debt ceiling. Yeah. That's
right.
why we have...
But that's the paying the bills that we've already racked
right.
up.
Yeah.
And so it just seems so clear to me that those are two separate arguments. The president discusses how they're two separate arguments.
Right.
And yet the media doesn't say it often enough.
No.
It's the same argument.
They're going with the Republicans' narrative on it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because it, ultimately, and I see where they're going with this, and this is where it'll always have weight. The government is expanding, so we have to raise the debt ceiling. It's costing more and more money, so we have to raise the debt ceiling. There's no point where we've ever had a vote, by the way, to lower the debt ceiling, because that's ridiculous. You don't even have to. It contracts naturally with expenditures. You know,
you pay the bill goes down.
I'll tell you the way it might be handled. As a matter of fact, at one point when our deficit has actually contracted, which it has continued to do, as a matter of fact, there was a report done that if it contracted any faster, it would actually cause inflation.
Really?
Yeah. So we're actually, it's if you look at the arc of it, it's actually going down at a faster rate than it's ever done after a situation like this. I think that when we hit a major contraction point, which would be below the debt ceiling, which happens quite often, the president should come out and go, today, the cost of government is actually below the cost of government 6 months ago.
That would be nice.
And it happens all the time, but it never gets any press because it only gets press when we boost these times. So.
That's right.
Yeah, we'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show with, you know, Jackie and Jim and Chris and I doing our best to just fill that void.
Massive
gap. Mama gets back. She'll be back tomorrow. Don't worry. She'll be back. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll be back right after this.
Fresh Republican outrage. You keep listening. She'll make more. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
Huh? Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechner, Jim
Good
Ward,
morning.
And Chris Lavoie, filling in for Mama while she's away visiting her mother.
We're officially a bi-coastal team now.
We are.
We were in D.C.
I know.
Now we're back in L.A.
Absolutely.
Wow.
We get around.
Yeah. We just need some balls here, and we're just the East Coast ones to make it all even.
And we're very, very tired.
Yes. Yes, everybody is dragging.
We were actually all texting yesterday, like, who got in later?
Yeah. I think you got home first.
I did get home first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I waited an
Hal
hour
and Jim
for
and
my
I,
luggage,
yeah.
but I did get home first.
Hal and Jim and I were all on the same flight.
Did you guys get bumped to that flight? Because I thought you guys were leaving earlier.
No, that was our flight.
Okay, yeah. Mine too. Yeah.
Well, I was separate on an earlier flight.
Yes. My girlfriend left earlier that morning because I didn't know what our arrangement was going to be when we did all this months ago, how
right.
it was going to work out.
Yeah.
It was, and that the Washington airport,
Dulles,
is like an hour away from downtown.
Right. Yeah.
It's a $75 cab ride minimum. There's this, I mean, arguably, if you're flying, if you're ever going to go to D.C. and you want to take the family, fly into Reagan, it will be more expensive.
National.
Huh?
Call it national, please. Don't
yes,
call it
right.
Reagan.
Yeah, into national airports.
That implies
yeah.
there'd be no air traffic.
It's closer to town.
Yeah.
It's easy. You can get on the metro.
It's in town.
Yeah,
right.
You can take the metro there.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's a very easy metro.
Yeah. Right. You can actually take a shuttle to the Pentagon from National Airport.
The planes are actually in danger of hitting the Washington Monument.
It's
That's
true.
Town
that, Which, know. By the way, did that make you nervous while you were at the inauguration? Because I was walking around, as much as all this gun talk has been going on, and I'm not naive enough to think that the first black president is ever going to be completely safe during his run. I feel that way about almost every progressive president. I arguably felt that way about Clinton at certain times, during the assault weapons ban part of his presidency. Because and you notice... There isn't a single Republican who's ever afraid the crazed liberal is going to run up and, because we might throw, you know, red paint glitter on your mink.
Yeah.
Or right, glitter bomb you, you know. But it's, they're the side with the Ted Nugents of the world, right, who believe that they're going to do an armed revolution, which, by the way, he said.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. Yeah.
To anybody who's still listening to Ted Nugent, except when you have Damn Yankees on your Pandora station. Little Sister is coming of age. Yeah. That song. Oh yes, that song has a lot more meaning when you know that he married a girl to avoid statutory rape charges.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But right now, Secretary Clinton is actually speaking at the Benghazi hearing and taking questions from John McCain.
Approaches that will make a difference. We, and I, again, I would urge that you look and read both the classified and unclassified versions of the ARB that tries to deal with the very questions that you and Senator Johnson are raising, the timing of it and the like. But I also hope we're looking forward, because right now Libya is still dangerous. It is still in a very unstable status. And whatever we can do for them, we at least ought to agree we need to do and get out there and start delivering.
Thank you, Madam Secretary.
Madam Secretary, I want to honor our commitment to you to try to keep you within a certain time frame, knowing you have to also go before the House. I also want to honor the opportunity for every member to ask a question. So I appreciate your very thorough and thoughtful answers, but to some degree you will dictate your own time frame. So with that, to Senator Durbin.
Madam Secretary, thank you for being here. Excuse me. It was a little more than 4 years ago that a number of your colleagues, myself included, encouraged you to take on this responsibility, believing you would have a profound impact on the world and on the diplomacy of the United States.
We grabbed, by the way, did we grab any of McCain's response? Because here's the interesting thing is, she's being very thorough in her answers, and McCain drug his chunk out for quite some time.
Yep.
And
she's the one that gets a spanking for it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But either way, McCain, there's the idea that the chairman was saying we want everybody to have a chance to ask you a question. What he basically means is a Democrat actually ask a question of substance, because you don't need to pass the wand around when McCain is asking questions. He has all the same conspiracy Fox points that, you know, that they're all going to ask. He and Lindsey Graham have been, you know, like these bizarre Benghazi conspiracy.
Yeah, they get the marching orders from Sean Hannity. Mm-hmm. Sean Hannity tells them what question to ask.
And in this case, he said something very illuminating, which was, he goes, he mentioned that the president said that it was an act of terror. He mentioned her mentioning that it was an act of terror. He said that in the three media appearances he said that the president went on, including The View, he said we're still investigating. That he didn't overtly say it was an act of Al-Qaeda and blah, blah, blah. Which
is the prudent thing to do.
Which is what you do as an adult.
Here's exactly what happened. And I'm never going to vary on this.
Right, exactly. Well, McCain then said, but then it was interesting language that he used. He goes, there was no mention that they somehow might be in some way connected to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Well, that's not an answer. That's why you keep investigating.
Right.
You keep investigating so you can say what it was. If they are, and they are real ones, versus the guys who, you know, go to a website and just think that they're associated, like the nine guys with nunchucks in Florida, those guys aren't Al-Qaeda related.
Right.
They might be Al-Qaeda wannabes, but that's not the same thing. And as the President of the United States or the Secretary of the United States, Secretary of State for the United States, you have an obligation that when you say Al-Qaeda did this versus some Al-Qaeda wannabes did this, there's a very big difference.
Right.
And one of them shores up a failing political arm of a radical movement. If you say Al-Qaeda was successful in an attack, that they got marching orders from a hierarchical structure,
we reason to attack somebody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it also gives them strength in their recruiting. It also says they're a legitimate arm still around, that they still have their same value that they had under Osama bin Laden or throughout, you know, the 2000s, you know, the early, you know, the first part of the Iraq and the Afghanistan war. But if you say it turned out that these were opportunistic anti-American guys who, you know, who are a militia related to the government of Libya, say, that do have tacit connections to Al-Qaeda, or did at one point, that's a bigger conversation as well. And you don't immediately say, then that's an act of war. The government of Libya has a militia group that was attached to them through their linkage,
right.
And we are now at war with the government of Libya.
Mm-hmm.
As a stance, and that's where McCain wants to go.
Yeah,
McCain wants to go to war with Iran, and McCain wants to link anybody who might attack the United States somehow, like we did with Iraq, to Iran to give us room to move, to either allow Israel to make an attack and us have their back, or to do it first and have them join us.
And that's irresponsible.
That's it. That's right. That's what a child does. That's what a TV commentator does. That is not what the president or the secretary of state does. That's not what an intelligence operative does. That's why she's saying read the classified and the unclassified versions, and you will see that most of your questions are answered. We'll
just
be back.
To score political points.
With more of the Stephanie Miller Show right after this.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh,
that's all right.
Guy forgot to press the button.
Oh, boy.
It's okay. It's all right. He's just too powerful. That's
he's
the
too,
problem.
He's too busy with the big gay lobby.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Incredible power. We'll
he's
get to
running
that in
the
just
big
one
gay
second.
Lobby. Yes.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, along with Jackie Schechner, Jim
Good
Ward,
morning.
And Chris Lavoie. We're filling in. Steph is away. Her mother's 90th birthday was yesterday. She'll be back tomorrow. So, okay, right now, Secretary Clinton is speaking to the members of the Senate hearing on Benghazi. She's going to speak to the House next. If you missed
probably
it,
say the same stuff all over.
Exactly, again. Having to repeat the same thing, which is why she has written remarks, but they'll probably come after her, like, you know, she needed a teleprompter to say her remarks. kind of thing.
John McCain's been yelling at clouds all morning.
Exactly.
I'm clouds!
John McCain basic his essential criticism of the president and the secretary was that even though they mentioned that it was an act of terror, even though that they recognized its links to militia related forces, the initial reports coming from the CIA that it may or may not have been linked to the video, all that watery intel that was coming in the first few days, and McCain's basic problem boiled down to: the president, on three occasions, including when he was on The View, said there's an ongoing investigation and we're still investigating what exactly happened and what exactly went wrong, which is true.
Right.
And that he didn't come out and say that the people who attacked were tacitly, probably, maybe, kind of, sort of, could have been related to Al-Qaeda. And he didn't say that in a definitive way.
On The View.
On The View.
Yeah, right.
Within a week and a half of the thing. Now, the CIA report has borne out that a local anti-American related militia that has access to these kind of weapons that may or may not have been related to, may or may not have been an Al-Qaeda wannabe group, not related, not getting orders from any kind of Al-Qaeda structure, but kind of wanting to join the fight and get a little bit of press because of that, or that they may have even been linked to the Libyan government that was on shaky ground, obviously, and still is, the old forces that America had not supported, that the president was not willing to give credit to Al-Qaeda for an attack they may not have actually structured themselves, or may have not been willing to open up a war front with the former Libyan regime and put us at war
based on a guess,
without getting all the information first. Mm-hmm. This is what McCain is arguing for the right to do right now. If you really boil it down, that's what he's doing. He wants to go to war, and we're not letting him. So he has a sad.
And he, of all people, should know better. I mean, was shot down, and severely wounded, and tortured.
Yeah, but how many times have we covered that part of it? This is a guy who flipped on torture when he himself was tortured. Yeah. Made a point, for that. So, But I've got a correction from Jack in D.C. Yes, Jack?
Hey, good morning. Hey, pal, you're a smart guy, and I hope you can admit that grabbing a huge overflowing jacket that's sitting in your lap and cleaning your glasses is different than grabbing a woman's skirt and using that to clean your glasses. You admit that, right?
Yeah, I would, but
neither's appropriate. Right.
Neither's appropriate. Right. But
no, I
did you not
neither
see the video?
Did you not? Appropriate. I did see the video, and your contention that he grabbed her skirt is a lie.
I beg to differ.
What would you like to wager on that?
I don't gamble or drink.
I'll tell you what. Your favorite charity, $1,000. My favorite charity, $1,000. That he did not grab her skirt. He grabbed a huge flowing overcoat she had.
No, it was a pashmina. It was a pashmina that was attached to her body.
Right, is hers.
It was not attached.
Wait, hold on. Wait, one second. Was it hers? Was it hers?
That's not what you said. You said it was her skirt. And
it was
not.
It was an article of clothing that she had. That is still rude,
Jack.
I agree. It is.
So you're defending his right to grab a woman's garment of clothing?
No.
You think it's right? You're good with it? You think it's enough to actually come to his defense and that there's a difference? That there's a material difference between the two?
Because you are coming to his defense.
There's a huge difference between grabbing a woman's skirt and a huge overflowing jacket
I have the video up in front of me right now, and what he does is he grabs the green sort of scarf. It's unclear.
It's not huge,
and it's close enough to her body.
Jack, would you do it?
I would never do it. Let me ask you this.
Okay. End of conversation.
There you go.
Jack wouldn't do it, but he'll come to the defense of Bush. He did.
No, I mean, he didn't. He doesn't lift up her skirt.
Right.
She's wearing pants.
She's wearing a green sort of shawl overcoat. But I will tell you, as a woman, if a man grabbed any part of my clothing
and wiped his glasses on it,
I beg your pardon, grossly inappropriate.
Let alone to wipe his glasses on it as if I were a cloth.
But it was a skirt. Yeah. Oh, I gotcha.
Totally inappropriate on every level.
And that guy claimed he was the writer for Newsbusters. Huh?
Right. Huh? Well, and that explains the level of their lifestyle.
Exactly.
That he would actually make that differentiation. That was important enough to him that he actually would come to defense.
$1,000. He wants to bet $1,000. Whether or not it was her skirt or
not
her
on whether
shawl.
It was appropriate.
No.
He was trying to cloud the issue there.
Of course. Exactly.
That's what they always do.
That's what Newsbusters and the right always do.
So she's wearing pants, but it's a sweater. It looks like she's wearing a sweater, and he actually wipes it on her sweater, which is at hip level, we should add.
Right.
So he's basically grabbing this piece of clothing at hip level and wiping his glasses on
it. But this sort of argument is exactly what's going on with the Benghazi thing. It's
Like,
well, was it Al-Qaeda or was it the movie?
But the point being is that...
it's inappropriate.
Then I will admit it was not the hem of her skirt. That was me misspeaking then. But I will say that he grabbed a woman whom he did not know within inches of her buttocks.
Yes.
That is fair.
How about that?
I am staring at it. That is fair to say.
Reached towards her buttocks, grabbed the nearest piece of flowing cloth, and cleaned
his
glasses on them.
That is correct.
And Newsbusters, for the record, thinks that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he wouldn't do it himself.
Yeah.
He thinks it's worth
I'll
defending.
I'll bet you $1 million.
Right. That the guy's only 10% less creepy.
Yeah.
And that is enough of a differentiation in behavior towards women. But good luck with that.
Do you think he would do that? Here's a good example, though. If that were a male producer, would he grab the men's sport coat and do that?
I think Bush would, because I don't think he cares about people that much. I think people are there to serve him. I think he grew up a rich, privileged kid.
Yeah.
And I think people are there's two classes of people.
Right.
Right.
And plus, he has no couth.
And I know that there's two classes of people. There's people with a dump button and those without. So I recognize that I have power over writers from Newsbusters.
Because that's what they do. They bust the news.
Right. And
that was very newsy.
No disrespect to him. I'm sure he's got, crayon marks all over his bib. And good luck, Newsbusters, with busting your own news. And coming to the defense of a man wiping his glasses on the clothes of a woman he does not know who is working at a place he himself does not work before he was even president. So let's go there. But anyways, good luck with that.
Newsbusters. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Newsbusters sussing out liberal bias.
Yes,
in liberal talk radio.
So important. An important distinction. Well done. and I would say to him, enjoy cradling Sean Hannity's package. Anyway, so there you go. But here's the news story we were getting to before before we were so rudely interrupted by the misogynist protectorate. that guises itself as Newsbusters, that the reason that the House has spent $3 million of taxpayer money defending DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, that interesting piece of legislation, one of the few that's ever been written to curtail the rights of a group of people in a country full of people in tricorn hats screaming liberty at the top of their lungs until it applies to a person they don't agree with, and who think we, you know, Democrats and liberals want a nanny state, but their solution to guns is put away the video games, and that being that their version of tyranny tyrannical government is Michelle Obama suggesting you eat more carrots and fewer candy bars. This is the, and it should come as no surprise that this is the reasoning that they came up with. Well, actually, let's take a break, and I'm going to come back. I'm going to tell you exactly what $3 million worth of taxpayer money spent by John Boehner came to the conclusion in regard to the defense of DOMA by Paul Clement, the super lawyer, who charges the American people $520 an hour.
Oh, my God.
$520 an hour. We'll be back.
I'm in the wrong place. Ex-Catholic girls gone wild. Her grade school nuns would like to slap her silly. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Back to the Stephanie Miller Show, now with 100% more news butthead calls.
I just want to let you know I've put on a sweater in case you have glasses you need to wipe.
Well, the thing is, I know you, and I respect you, and even if I didn't, I wouldn't.
No.
Either.
Jim would.
You wouldn't do that to anybody.
No.
You didn't know.
No, of
That's just,
not.
It's ludicrous. And in case he wants to call back, by the way, if that wasn't enough as far as the belief somehow that some people are below you, attitudes of, you know, one president versus the other. There's a great video, of course, of shaking hands with a black person in Haiti and then wiping his hand on Bill Clinton.
On his shirt,
On his shirt.
I'll put you $1 million. You didn't wipe it on his jacket.
Yeah.
And it was on his shirt. Gotcha!
And it was just sweat. It wasn't because it was black sweat in particular, but the guy was black. But that's not important to the germane. I'll bet you $1,000 if it was another sweaty person, he would have
done the same thing.
So
wipe it on your own pants.
Right. Yeah.
Or,
and be surreptitious about
it. Wipe your glasses off on your own shirt.
Right, exactly. Or ask for something.
Yes, a tissue.
Because it's not like you're not surrounded by sycophants who will run up and polish your glasses for you.
I bet there must be footage of Bush clearing his nose, like, you know, the
snot.
The Russian hanky, right, yeah, which is my ex-Hungarian girlfriend. She's still Hungarian, but not my girlfriend.
That's right.
Very important distinction. They call it the Russian handshake.
So
they one nose it out. But I do think that's an important distinction. But before we went to break,
yes.
I was mentioning, you remember how the Republicans, they really care about deficits. Why didn't the president mention the deficit in the inauguration? Oh, he did, actually.
No, he talked about it.
Yeah, he did. That's what I mean. But like, the Republicans are under
the
impression.
The word deficit.
Huh?
Did he say the word deficit? Is that what they're...
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he certainly...
Talked about spending.
Yes. But regardless, the Republicans, House Republicans, have been spending they've spent $3 million defending the Defense of Marriage Act.
Yes.
The bill that guarantees the federal government will not protect the rights of gays to get married and basically move from state to state. If you get married in Massachusetts and you want to move to Arkansas, they don't have to recognize it if they don't want to, is the idea. I mean, that's an important – that took legislative priority. That was important enough. They couldn't move on S-CHIP legislation in a couple of sessions, but they could really, you know, this was
– hone
in on this. And now they have paid a lawyer, Paul Clement, $520 an hour, according to Think Progress, to to defend it in court. And his reasoning as to why it should not be seen before the Supreme Court and why it should not, it should stand and never be put before the Supreme Court, where, by the way, it would more than likely lose. And that's why he doesn't want it in there. And the reason he's giving
$520 an hour gets you what?
His $520 an hour reason is that gays don't need their lack of rights put in front of the Supreme Court because they're too powerful. In short, gays and lesbians are one of the most influential, best connected, best funded, and best organized interest groups in modern politics, and have attained more legislative victories, political power, and popular favor in less time than virtually any other group in American history. Gays and lesbians not only have the attention of lawmakers, they are winning many legislative battles, and the importance of this factor in the analysis cannot be gainsaid. Given that the ultimate inquiry focuses on whether a group needs the special intervention of the courts or whether issues should be left for the democratic process, the political strength of gays and lesbians in the political process should be outcome determinative here. Meaning that they're getting a lot of rights, you know, state to state anyways.
Right type so, things.
Yeah. Even though they don't have them.
Right.
They're kind of gonna.
So their argument is that the white people should have no say because we have too much power.
Well, that arguably.
Good point.
Interestingly enough, Ian Millhiser at Think Progress makes this point, which is one can only wonder what Paul Clement might have written if Virginia, the state of Virginia, had hired him to defend their practice of racial marriage discrimination when it was first before the justices in 1967, writing, Negro leaders meet often with the president and congressional leaders, and indeed President Johnson himself signed two major laws pushed by the Negro lobby. Negro groups not only led a widely attended rally on the National Mall, but they routinely organized well-attended sit-ins, marches, and other events that garner press attention and national sympathy.
So why even have Loving versus Virginia?
Exactly. That's the argument.
Right.
Is that they don't deserve their equal rights to be held to scrutiny in the Supreme Court because they're on TV
a
lot.
There's too many blacks.
Right.
That escalates.
Yeah. Gay people have two sitcoms. They don't need to have their rights reviewed by the Supreme Court when they're denied those very rights.
They have Good Times.
Yeah, right, exactly. Black people don't need, Good Times.
There's Julia.
The Jacksons seem quite happy.
Sure.
Why would you?
As ridiculous as the argument is, I think what's
You have all four tops.
Right.
What's even more astonishing is, this is the best they could do.
Yeah.
$520
an hour, $3 million spent later. This is the essential argument for defending DOMA not going before the Supreme Court. And the reason this guy's come up with this argument is so that he doesn't have to go before the Supreme Court because he knows, based on the Constitution, he will lose.
Yeah. Your Honor,
correct.
Two words, will and grace.
Yeah, right. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. But that's stunning. That's your tax dollars at work. Never mind the whatever. 30.
Don't we get a say in the fact that we don't want our money spent on defending?
Yeah, and it was called the 2010 elections, and we skipped it.
Yep.
That's really what it was.
Yeah,
it was
we stayed home.
The reinforcement of the anti-gay. Yeah, many people in this room didn't, but the point is, a lot of progressives and liberals did, and you know that's what that joke that I tell at Sexy Liberal means. That I have a lot of liberal friends who love this country so much that they almost vote almost every other election.
Yeah,
and
that's why it matters.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we vote every 2 years in this country. We can't let stuff like that slide. And after 2010, they felt like they had won a legislative victory on social issues.
Still
and
won
so,
there.
Yep. And so, look at that. He still got his I voted sticker. That's why it is actually more important, almost that you really make a point to get your friends out. If you're a regular voter, great. But drive somebody to the polls with you. Make a lunch out of it. Take them to lunch and go vote during your lunch hour. I mean, that is one of the single biggest organizational tools that Democrats, who outnumber Republicans in a lot of areas that often vote red, could do, which is on election day, or if you have early voting in your area, gather up a friend and go, guess what? You're registered to vote, right? Nope. Okay, I'm going to take you to lunch 3 months before the election cycle, and we're going to go get you registered to vote. We'll take you someplace where we know your registration will get chucked out. And then you and I are going to meet here again. We're going to have another lunch on election day or in the lead up in the early election time, and we're going to go vote together. But, you know, bring a buddy. Yeah. And it is one of the reasons why that was actually used by the what's now Organizing for America. But was
Organizing
the,
for Action?
Action, right. Organizing for Action, which was Obama for America.
Right.
That organization, that's part of what they did was, you know, buddy voting. That's got
they had a
to,
great ground great
ground gown.
Ground
game.
Ground
game.
Ground game.
Wow.
Ground game.
Yeah.
Pheasant
yes, Pheasantburger.
Yeah.
Right.
It's amazingly
game.
Well organized.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the get out the vote is true.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that is tremendously important this time around. We're going to take more of your calls, by the way, after this break. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks with Jackie Schechner, Jim Ward, and Chris LaVoy filling in for Steph while she's out. She'll be back tomorrow. We'll be back right after this.
Stephanie Miller.
When you open the door, will your mystery date be a dream or a dud?
Oh!
So, welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, you've been here the whole time.
You're right.
I'm talking to people who are actually...
It's not always about you, Chris.
Oh, damn it.
Just because you have the big gay lobby. It's not
yeah.
I thought it was always about
you have,
me.
You have too much power to gain
right.
power.
Right.
Let's,
I have too many rights.
Yeah, you have too many rights except the ones you don't have.
You need some lefts.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which, by the way, the especially this particular inauguration, I think as much as like we talked about this earlier when we played that little Crossroads GPS nugget that Karl Rove, his organization, that was, by the way, one of the biggest losers on the night.
Oh,
I think they were third only to Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan.
How much money they spent and got nothing for it.
And got nothing for it. Along with the NRA, by the way.
The return on investment was...
Yeah, the NRA's return
on nothing, sir.
Negative.
Good day.
Terrible. And who were you? Who did you? You mentioned before when we were in the break earlier about someone saying that Benghazi was the most, the biggest tragedy since.
I think it was
9/11.
Rand Paul.
Yeah, Rand Paul saying that or whatever.
Yeah.
And we were making the point sort of during that same break that Newtown actually,
yes,
more innocent Americans died in that situation than the Benghazi attack.
Yep.
And
yeah, Senator Rand Paul said to Clinton that he would have relieved her of her post had he been president.
Wow.
Yeah. And that
good thing he's not ever going to be president.
It was the worst tragedy since 9/11.
Here's a quote from Patrick Leahy. For Republicans to blame the administration for failing to protect our diplomats without acknowledging their own efforts to slash resources for embassy security is pure undistilled hypocrisy.
Right, which is actually what they're serving in Boehner's
suite
when you come out. Would you like some pure undistilled hypocrisy? It's from McConnell's stash. It's bourbon. It's like a mint julep of idiocy.
But for Senator Clinton, Secretary of State Clinton's credit, apparently she has fired back at the panel saying that, you know, what was behind the attack is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm,
whether
right.
it was the video or whether it was terrorists acting on their own accord without the instigation of the video at this point is irrelevant. It was 4 dead Americans.
Right.
And the point is,
how do we
figure out what to do now
to be safe? And no matter who does the attack in the future, we should be able to handle it.
Exactly.
That's what an adult does.
Yeah.
You know, you can relitigate and you can see what the holes were, but only so that you can patch them in the future.
That's right.
And that's been a consistent refrain from this White House and from Secretary Clinton throughout. Interestingly enough, the inauguration itself, a lot of people are making the point that he covered every major progressive directional milestone that everybody's looking for this time out. Gay rights were actually covered twice specifically in it. A direct reference to marriage, but also the reference to Stonewall, which was, for those of you who don't know, a historic turning point where cops who used to regularly roust gay people
Raid gay bars.
Right.
Yeah. Because it was illegal for gays to gather.
Right. yeah. Exactly.
Was that the law?
That was the law.
There can be no gaggles of gays.
Yeah. Yes, right. Yeah, more than 2 at the same time. and it's a committee meeting. I don't know what. Yeah. Then they'll start. Then
you have a club.
Then the architecture in the neighborhood starts to improve, and then it's all hell breaks loose.
Landscaping.
Exactly. This whole they're gonna get together. They're gonna get in this bar. They're gonna get up close to each other, have a few drinks, and then make the whole area nicer.
And gentrify we
have to
everything.
We have to put a stop to this immediately. But Stonewall is where
you
they
make
had
the neighborhood
it,
safer. What are we gonna do now?
Famously, drag queens were giving the cops what
well,
for?
Well, they were That's mourning right. the death of Judy Garland.
Right.
Because it happened, I think it was the night after Judy Garland had died.
Right.
And so they were mourning the death of Judy Garland. And so they were really, really upset as it was. And then the cops came in and raided the bar where they were gathering.
Right.
And they just said, oh, hell no.
And many of them in drag
were
laying the beat down on cops who were not expecting throwback, I guess.
Exactly.
And it became a genuine civil rights.
Hook.
Yeah, right. It became a, like, that.
Well, that was one of the big first times that
they
gays
fought back. Absolutely.
I wonder how many of the cops decided to stay in the bars because they were having too much fun.
Right, exactly. Like, this feels good. Twist my arm a little harder, Steve. By the way, the bustier looks fantastic. But the fact that he brought up Stonewall
are fabulous.
Amongst the mentioning of other civil rights turning points is an extraordinary moment. Mark and Jack.
Scooter Kansas in the chat room says, Judy Garland's dead?
Clutch the pearl. What a sneaky thing to do. Let's go to Mark in Jacksonville because he's been holding on. Mark, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you all for taking my call.
Of course.
I'm a first-time caller, so I may be a little nervous.
That's okay. We don't have a first-time caller song like or ding like Randy Rhodes does.
No.
We'll have to come up
Thank
with
God
well,
that.
It's but it's I guess it's Steph, so we could use this. Yeah. That would work.
That's your first-time caller. what I was wanting to call about, if I was putting this on the email, this would be kind of like an IMHO.
Mm-hmm.
But regarding the inauguration, in general, any inauguration president or any election, to me that kind of represents the penultimate in American exceptionalism because, in spite of Ted Nutjob and the NRA to the contrary, we do not need to pick up weapons. We do not need to take arms to change things. We do it peacefully. And that, to me, is really...
Right, the peaceful exchange of power is tantamount to the importance of our democracy almost as much as the vote.
Man, except in 1963.
But, right.
Well, there you go, Jim.
but along the way, there's no way you can transition from arguably the rest of the world and from that point backwards in history.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we did it. That's how it was always done. It was it was a version of Caesar every time. Whoever it was power structure to power structure, and you often transitioned as many Middle Eastern countries have, even in recent history, from the military side wiping out the citizen side, having a citizen government flowers, the military overtakes it. Mm-hmm. Then after a while the military government kind of grows fat on its own comfort because it is no longer a fighting force and then is voted out and it doesn't have the will to fight back, arguably, that a citizen government rises out of that slowly or some sort of royal or tyrannical version of that comes up. But either way, a ruling community party like the Communist Party or whatnot who in Russia took over, killing the czars and putting in place that similar thing. But then doing the exact same thing in the next major turnaround, maybe not 4 years like we do, but in 20 years or in 15 years. But it's the regularity. You're absolutely right. And it was interesting. We were at the – and thank you for holding on, by the way. A big hand
no
to Martin Jacksonville for hanging on as long as he did.
2 hours.
But yeah. The I was asked, I was interviewed at the Green Ball, not by, but at the Green Ball about people saying that, there are all these balls this weekend and people are getting all dressed up. And is this just a thing for rich people to rub elbows with politicians and whatnot and this stuff? And I went, perhaps. And I'm sure there are certain amounts
There's
of that going on.
I
live
that,
in,
sure.
I, of course, I live in Los Angeles. That's, the parties.
That's a Tuesday.
The parties around the Oscars are partially built to. To get the next Oscar-winning movie off the ground. People go, I have an idea.
It's business.
Yeah, there is business that will continue on, no question. But there is a celebration to, aspect of it where out of respect for the extraordinary nature of it, you get dressed up. that the inauguration balls and the tuxedos and all those kind of things is an element of, I don't care what your best clothes are, but you put them on. You celebrate the fact that we are this kind of a country. That part of our exceptionalism is that, you know, it's not that you can't show up in jeans and go, yeehaw, America, and do a motorcycle ride in the parade, and that's your version of it. That's totally fine. But there is an element of, let's class it up a little bit to show respect, just like you would wear better clothes to church, just like you would wear better clothes to a wedding, or a funeral, or any place where you're meaning to.
That's a nice way of looking at it. Absolutely.
You mean to show respect.
Right.
And that respect is earned through the blood of patriots dying in the battlefield and people who have given their blood, sweat, and tears over the years in volunteer organizations and in governmental offices and in private business and in personal ways to make this country a better place and to make it the longest surviving democracy on the planet and continue that tradition with honor. And so to me, all those inaugural balls where everybody gets dressed up and kind of – it's more about paying respect to – our process, you know, and I think if we had a little more comfort with that, then I think we might vote more often.
That makes sense.
You know?
Or at least appreciating we have the right to.
Exactly.
I mean, I think we just take it for granted in such a horrible
way. Well, I guess we
way.
Just need more balls, is what you're saying.
I agree. Yeah. I think there should be voting balls. I think everybody should go to a voting ball.
A voting ball?
Yeah, or at least two. You know what I mean? There should be at least two voting balls a year.
There were two official balls this year.
There were.
Really?
There were two official balls this year.
Yeah.
That's true. There were a lot of unofficial balls all over Washington. There were balls everywhere. Small ones, big ones. Some, you know, were a little longer than the other ones.
Right,
the
sure.
Some a little more inflated than
some
others.
Some finished earlier. Some hung around a little longer.
Let's take a break.
We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie
no
Miller
blue
Show.
Balls, as far as I know.
And, well, and the most transparently, pathetically childish analogies we can come up with ever. 1-800-STEP-12, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Free speech? What a concept. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Yes, I do. I do know that.
You do?
I'm aware of that.
Okay,
I have enough
then.
Of a positive self-image that I can be aware that I am a shooting star.
We were geeking out over technology.
It's true. During the break, Jim and I were talking about Tom Scholz, the guitar player from Boston, who designed...
We went into break with a Boston song.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
And Tom Scholz, the guitar player, created all the guitar technology, the circuit boards, the wiring that actually created his stuff. He did that himself. And skates, I guess he lives on that technology. That's why they only put out an album every decade, because they don't have to. That being said, as we are in the waning moments of this this once-in-a-lifetime kind of grouping of the four of us together, which I just think is lovely, all I want to say is filibuster reform, filibuster reform, filibuster reform. That if it looks like Harry Reid is leaning in that direction, that they will use the 51 vote, single vote majority. To get things through. If they can't get an agreement on it, I think the most important one is no secret holds, no anonymous holds.
If you're going to hold something up, you got to put your name on
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And if you're going to filibuster, you got to talk.
I love it.
I want to hear from you.
I love it.
If you want to obfuscate, if you want to not talk about why you're holding it because you know it's politically untenable or not going to be favorable to your constituency, fine. But you have to prove it by reading the phone book or wasting everybody's time reading, whatever nonsense.
The Pickwick Papers.
Exactly. Right, exactly. Read the script to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington if you want to. But don't ever. And by the way, let's go to Tom in Columbus just because that was kind of, I think, along his point, too. Tom, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great.
You stole my thunder.
Sorry. I was trying to give you the nice lead-in, but fire away.
Well, I was just going to say what you just said. If nothing else, they really need to get the Udall, Harkin, Merkley rules reform package passed.
Yes.
Because the watered-down one is not going to do it. And I understand where Harry Reid is coming from. He wants to maintain what illusion of comedy. Not comedy.
I know, that's always the weirdest word that they use. Yeah. Comedy meaning, comfortable discourse.
Which can be comedic.
Go along to get along.
Yes, exactly.
And I know he wants to do that, and I know he would really love to see bipartisan support of it, and, that's great. But at the end of the day, this has got to pass because it's the only way that Obama really has a chance post, let's say, 2014 of getting his agenda through in the second term.
I totally agree. Excellent point, Tom. And I will go so far as to say that I think if you have a chance at comity in the Senate, it will come from the fact that that having to filibuster means you have to talk. Then the chances of you actually having to come to the table with an idea and actually negotiate might be far higher because you can't just stop stuff.
Well, it would require substance as opposed to just political posturing. And I think it's important.
Did you just say substance?
What?
On the
Stephanie Miller
show? I can't. I got to erase that. I apologize.
Without breaking.
Erase that thought.
Without breaking, you get comedy and comedy.
That's true.
Yes, you do.
No, I mean, I just think for people who don't necessarily understand it, the way it works now is you can get the will of the minority to trump the will of the majority simply by playing games.
Right.
And if you elected your officials into office because you want them to accomplish something, we've got to have a system where a handful of people can't hold up the process, and that's the way it works now.
It's interesting, and maybe you know this. I'm sure almost everything is available via Freedom of Information Act request if you give it enough time and it's not truly classified. But I'm curious to see if you could get who put the anonymous holds on what as a Freedom of Information Act.
Oh, that would be interesting.
And then and what the turnover rate, because it's not classified information, would be. So if there's an anonymous hold on a bill, within a matter of days, one would think that the Freedom of Information Act would allow you to have access to who does the anonymous hold. And then we should start a website maybe or something going, if you're going to put an if this doesn't go through, if this change does not occur, that's what I'm going to do this year.
Accountability for anonymous holds.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. If you put an anonymous hold on something, we're going to out you for it.
I love that idea.
Because there should be none. We're talking about a truly representative government. There is no singular, more tyrannical act than stopping a legislative bill that gets the support of the majority, but not standing by while you're stopping it.
Yeah, see, I don't understand why. I mean, the only reason to do it anonymously is if you know it's not
popular. It'll lose. Or your financial handlers will kick your ass for it.
That would make sense.
That's really what it is. You get a lot of money from a particular lobby, and they are paying you to stop those things. And unfortunately, the tide is
against... Because if you're ideologically in favor of it, then you would stand up for it.
Exactly. If you truly believed it. I mean, they make... And they do that kind of stuff all the time. I mean, there's silly bills on the Congress, which I don't have any problem with. Let's make it National, Ben and Jerry Day to support, because they're in my district and stuff. I have no problem with that.
I'm going to put an anonymous hold on that one. But that's what I'm a Breyer's girl, so I just would like to.
That's not an anonymous hold. You just stated why. See, gotcha. Way
to
go.
Because I like another brand of mint chocolate.
Chip. See, there you go.
I do.
But I think if you're gonna talk about freedom, you're gonna wave this. You're gonna show up in a tricorn hat, dressed as a Ben Franklin wannabe or a Kentucky militia member at a Glenn Beck rally, and then in the middle of it go, I'm here to defend DOMA, which is a federal rule against some people I don't like not having equal rights, simply so I don't feel icky, which is bizarre. That's what you need to be protected from, is that you don't want to feel icky. Or your solution to gun violence is not high-capacity magazines, which have nothing to do with shooting, have everything to do with being a human pipe bomb, because that's really what that is.
Yeah.
When you walk in, when you have a high-capacity magazine, the goal is not shooting, it's spraying.
You don't have to actually aim at anything.
Not at all. And that's the whole
point. You're going to hit
something. That's the whole point of it. And any responsible gun owner knows that if you can't hit what you're shooting at in 9 shots, I don't want you living next to me.
Yes.
I mean, that's it's 3 shots, really. But if there are intruders in your home and there's more than 6 of them, they're probably armed and coming to get you for a good reason.
Yeah.
And most of the people who are arguing for high-capacity magazines are planning on killing a cop at some point in the future.
Whenever there's a deer season, like in Wisconsin or Michigan, everybody, including their pets, has to wear orange vests because these guys are just
randomly shooting. Well, two guys with AK-47s riddling a subdivision with bullets.
Yeah.
This 9-year-old girl finds a bullet in her microwave because these guys they thought it would be fine because they were shooting at a downward angle. Well, they're uphill from this place, and the bullets are skipping off the ground and going into these houses, putting holes in the houses big enough to enter the house. And but for a luck of the draw, no pun intended, this young girl wasn't between that bullet and the microwave in her own kitchen.
Sounds like these guys need a hobby that doesn't involve shooting into the ground.
Well, they did have one, drinking and smoking pot, which they were also doing at the same time.
Oh, that sounds safe.
And again, I don't have a problem with those two hobbies if you want to do them. I'm actually for the legalization of marijuana, and I think you should have the right to be drunk in your own home. But you don't mix it with being with shooting a gun. And if you have a history of getting drunk, having drugs, and shooting your gun at the same time, then that should affect your background check in the future. That's a common sense approach, I think, that the president was talking about in those situations. And but going forward, this is interesting. Like, I want to request that everybody after the show today find some way to either contact their senatorial representative or Harry Reid's office or both.
Yep.
And insist.
Go to Senate.gov to find out how.
Exactly. Go to Senate.gov and find out how and whom to contact to let them know that you want a verbal filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not just saying this because I, as someone in the news-oriented punditry with a radio show an occasional visit to this show on Wednesdays, I would get tons of free audio clips out of jerk-headed weirdos trying to defend the most egregious bills by jabbering nonsense for hours on the Senate floor. That's just comedy gold.
Well, it also make them rethink whatever it is they do because they think, they're lazy. Do I really want to have to stand up there and talk for it?
Imagine Mitch McConnell filibustering.
What?
God. Lettuce. Somebody poke holes in my jar.
Steph will be back tomorrow. Thank you so much.
This has been so much fun.
It's been great. Thank you, Jamie Jagger. Thanks, Crystal Boy and Jim Moore, for having me today. It was a lovely hump day. Have a great hump day. That's what I say. That's my only other thought for you. Have a great hump day. And you know what I mean by that. Bye.